Welcome to B2B Healthy Copy Talks, the podcast that blends together marketing strategy, copywriting, and messaging tactics for the B2B fitness, health, and wellness industries. As a former personal trainer, award-winning writer for major health and fitness magazines, and an online fitness course creator, I know firsthand the challenges of marketing within these industries. So whether you're a seasoned copywriter, a savvy marketer, or an industry expert, you'll find valuable insights in every episode. From B2B SaaS providers and marketing experts to fitness entrepreneurs, I'll bring you interviews and discussions that spark creativity, drive growth, and jack up your professional game. We'll explore the specific challenges within the B2B world, how to stand out among the competition, and increase conversions in every area. Let's dive in. My guest today is Nadine Hare. Nadine is founder of Write Wiser. She's known for hiding her cats and coffee on her LinkedIn posts and sharing stories on the Migrant in Mexico Substack. She's also a creative marketer and copywriter by trade and has experience with international brands, including WeWork, Globalization Partners, Coca-Cola, and many others. So today, what we are going to talk about is the difference between being a copywriter within an agency, being a solopreneur, and is there such a thing as a fractional copywriter? So we're going to get into all that, the pros and cons and her experience with both, and let's get into it. All right, Nadine, so nice to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. This is going to be fun.
Of course, right back at you, Linda. Thank you ever so much for inviting me.
And as always, we met on LinkedIn. Like, I meet so many people. I swear if it wasn't for LinkedIn, I don't think I'd have any friends. Because I just meet people.
I was going to say that over you. Like, all my friends live in this little light up box. This is where they all live. And to be honest, I think that that's cool because while I have some friends in real life, but a lot of them don't share my passions and what I do for work. So I talk to them about like the issues that you're going through and they're like, oh yeah, that sounds tough. Cool, you know, but on LinkedIn, like we really get each other.
That, you know what? That's such a great point because I had connected with a friend of mine who's not at all in the marketing world at all. Like, doesn't, and right. There's nothing even we have in common, really. But she contacted me. We were talking on the phone, and I said, "Oh, do you know I have a podcast?" And she said, "No, what's it about?" And I said, "Well, it's copywriting and marketing." And she very sarcastically said, "Oh, how fun!" And I'm like, "Wow, there are people who actually would find that fun." So. That's why I have to be on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah, rude. Okay. Well, she doesn't know what she's missing.
I know, right? So
I do like her energy, though. Like, say it to my face, you know?
Oh, I know. I usually have friends like that. They are not going to hold back on me at all. So, but yeah, so I am excited about this conversation because you and I talked briefly before about working for an agency or working for yourself. And I have only done one of those. I've never worked for an agency, never worked in corporate. I don't think I do well anyway because I'm so uncooperative. I'm just, you know, I mean, that's why I've always been an entrepreneur. I am not a team player unless I'm really forced into it. Like, I just want to go in my cave and just do my thing. I wanted to hear a little bit about, like, you have your corporate, you work for corporate as well as agencies.
As agencies, yes, exactly. We started talking about this, and because I think my feeling when you said that was like, wow, I wish I'd had that entrepreneurial spirit. And I find myself saying this all the time, especially when I see people on LinkedIn who are like 22 and they're like, got my own little marketing gig. And I'm like, oh, good for you. I wish it had occurred to me to do that, even as a side hustle back then. I think the most that I would have done was like, I was writing like SEO blogs for people who were my ex-employers, but they would come back to me and like give me odd jobs. But that was when I was like 28, you know, like I didn't have any entrepreneurial spirit. So for me, having started in agencies and corporate, that was where I got my start, where I learned a lot. So while I'm appreciative of the learning, I'm with you. I don't play nice with other children, and they're certainly not on the long term. I think the thing is that probably you and I, we have very clear ideas of what's good for a company. And for me, it's very frustrating to see a company doing something that's not good for them.
Right.
But sometimes you have to kind of let that go when you're in a company in order to get on with your teammates.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's been my experience. But no, I've been very lucky to tried it all so I can say entrepreneur is the way to go.
Really? So even after all that, well, tell me a little bit about, just from someone who's not been in an agency, because I always heard from people who work for agencies that it's very fast paced and it's very like, there's a lot of meetings. And Can you talk a little bit about what is it like to work for an agency?
I can sum it up by saying that if I see a job advertisement at the moment, whether it's contractor or full-time, and it says agency experience required, for me, that's a no. That's a, I'm not going to like that. It's going to be tough. It's going to be, fast-paced. But I think that I'm quite a fast worker. I actually work very quickly. But there's a difference between working quickly and working with no plan and no strategy.
Right.
So for me, I see fast-paced and I'm reading between the lines, like, does this mean... No, there's no plan. Everything's reactive. We're just doing things as they're requested. And to a large extent, literally doing what the client tells us rather than us, the agency, we're the experts,
right,
saying, hey, we know what we're doing. You should do this. The reason I think that has also been reinforced from being in corporate, hiring agencies, and the way that a lot of people hire up in the marketing realm, the marketing gods, the way they talk about a lot of us creatives, like a copywriter, a designer, a web designer, they talk about us a little bit like we're a production line. And I've literally had people use that line, production line. But in a nice way, it's very strange. So Nadine, I really trust you. I know you'll get this through the production line really quickly. And it's like, that's a strange way to see us. So when we're just executors, there's no trust of like what we actually know or what we can advise you. For me, that's a frustrating environment to be in. I'd imagine you'd feel the same.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that because I don't know. Did you see the post on LinkedIn? Somebody, they cut the name out of the person who was posting. It was a job posting. Did you see this?
Yeah.
If you expect a 9-to-5 job, like I didn't know when I was reading this, it was for a copywriter position. Okay. Because it didn't say anything about that. Because the person just cut, I mean, the screenshot did not include that. But I found it on Reddit because it made LinkedIn lunatics subreddit.
LinkedIn lunatic. I've heard about this Reddit. No, I was WhatsApped it by my copywriter friends, actually. They were like, have you seen this? That was where I first saw it. And then I saw it coming up on LinkedIn all the time.
Yeah,
it's shocking.
It was like if you expect to have any kind of work-life balance, just skip this ad. And everything was like, yeah. I actually left a comment. I forget even who posted it. And I said, let me translate. We're going to treat you like, and I used the poop emoji. And you're going to love it. And so people were like liking my comment. But I think that's kind of how, like I picture agencies like working, like I think about coming up with copy in a team. Is it a team environment? Like, are you the only copywriter typically, or do you work with other copywriters?
Typical marketing answer. It depends. It depends on the client and who you're catering to. A lot of my experience was a little bit like this job ad. I would say it was never this bad. So none of the agencies I've worked for would have never outright said no paid holiday. It's not, there's no switching off, you know, and we weren't like that. We played hard as much as we worked hard. But for me, in terms of like the hierarchy or who I would be working with, I would always be paired with a designer, always be that a graphic or a digital designer. Inevitably, I would have like my peer, and that's then your comfort person. Okay. So when you're having a bad day, they know because they were in all the client meetings with you and they know how stressed you are. And also they're there to celebrate your wins. So when the client comes back and goes, actually, we had this huge win, you can say, great, okay, now I can run to my peer and they'll understand it. But all kinds, we have done, let's say usually I would have been the main copywriter, but then perhaps I would have been paired with a social media expert, an inbound expert. And I think when I was in an agency, we were still talking about inbound marketing as though it was like the thing, you know. I don't hear that term anymore. And I don't know if it's that I'm just not in that world or if we've stopped talking about inbound marketing.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think
the last time I heard it.
Well,
I have a certificate in inbound marketing, but I've never, it's been a while since anyone's asked me about it.
That's funny. I think there's so many like phrases and terms that kind of go in and out of trend. I can't keep up with it all. You know, I'm trying, since I've been on LinkedIn consistently for 3 years, and I've learned so much about marketing. I didn't even know what B2B was, literally. I had to.
No.
At the beginning, I was just, I came in from nowhere. I'm like, I don't, and I was working, I was posting. I wasn't posting yet, but I was looking at everybody was talking about. I didn't know any of the acronyms. And even now I don't, if I see somebody that loads up on them, because there's some marketers that do that, I just skip it. It's like, I'm not going to sit here and try to figure out what this person is even talking about.
Oh, the acronyms. I know. We love them. We love them. It's embarrassing. Yeah, no, completely agree. I would love to hear about how that was for you, because I certainly feel like being in corporate and agencies, it meant that a lot of the time I was on LinkedIn sharing things anyway. So then when I started sharing my own things, like, you know, trying to be insightful on my own, not just resharing the company stuff or congratulating my colleagues for working with me for 2 years or something like that. There was a pretty low barrier to entry for me emotionally or mentally, I guess you could say, because I was kind of already doing it. But right. For you, when you were just like, you weren't in that ambiance anyway, and no. You were like, great, LinkedIn, I just need to start posting. That must have been weird.
It was, and it was, there was a couple of people who, this one person in particular, who just sort of, he's a web designer. And he found me and just said, hey, I think, you know, maybe we could work together. And we ended up collaborating. He was the first person to reach out to me.
Interesting.
And he kind of taught me the ropes. Like, you need to go in there. If somebody comments, you need to comment back. Like, I didn't know any of the first things about it. But what was funny is earlier this week, I was on I was a guest on a podcast. And when I said B2B, he said, can you please explain what that is for our audience? And I'm like, I use that term so often now, you know, where it's like, okay, true. Am I getting to be like that? Like, am I one of these acronym people? But B2B is pretty well known, you know, business to business. So
I think anyone who's following you, they should know what it is. I mean, you're like, if you want to explain it, go for it. But I feel like anyone who's following it, like, if you're in marketing and you don't know B2B, B2C, I feel like at this point, it's pretty...
You should get
it. It would be hard not to know. You should Google it.
Quit.
Google it. We're not explaining it here.
Right. I love when you Google stuff like that too, and there's like 80 different interpretations of like an acronym.
Oh, it's, I know.
Some of them are funny. I'm like,
I was just on a Zoom this morning with Pasha Irshad. He works for Shape and Scale, and they were talking about ABM marketing. And I was like, for a moment, I was like, oh, I wonder if ABM is account-based marketing or if that's... Do you know what I mean?
Right,
like, it could be another thing. And I was then scared to join because I felt like, what if I think this is about ABM and I'm going to get in there and it's like some data scientist term that,
right.
That means nothing to me. And I'm just like the idiot copywriter, you know, in my pink fluffy pen. Like,
you know what's funny? And like in fitness, there's this device called the BOSU. It stands for, it's both sides up. It's like a dome. It looks like a dome.
Oh, is that what that means? No. I know what the BOSU is. Yeah.
But there's BOFU in marketing is bottom of the funnel.
Yeah.
And true. The first time I saw BOFU, I'm like, what are they talking about? Are they talking about a fitness thing? Like, what? I don't look at it.
I think the first time I saw it was MOFU and I thought somebody had spelled MOFO wrong. I was like, oh, it's just an error.
It would be so much fun if they would use our interpretations, don't you think?
I agree. But absolutely agree.
Well, how did you transition from working for an agency to now you're a freelancer or you're still, you have your own business,
yes.
Right?
Yes, I do. I have my own brand, Rightwiser. And depending kind of what the client needs, but some of them do want me in as just a contractor. Like they come in and they're, especially the big brands like Moody's and Coca-Cola, they're like, we just need a copywriter. Like we have this thing, we just need it done. And that's fine. I'm very happy to work like that. But with a lot of smaller clients, especially, you know, budding startups, some brands that have impact driven startups, they need a little bit more strategy. And for me, that's very enjoyable because while I have these clients who just want me to execute and they know what they want, and for me, they usually want like sensible things and it's a delight to execute on it. There are other people who they are quite happy to have the strategy and the guidance and they want you there and they want to know, like, am I hiring the right kind of person? Is this the right way to go? Should I be putting money into referral marketing or whatever? Mm. That kind of more fractional chief something or other, that kind of role. I really enjoy that. I don't think that answered your question at all.
It was part of it.
Off on a tangent. You were like, how did I transition? And I was like, I'm going to tell you this other thing.
How do I get her to talk to, no, answer my question. No, that's part of it. Yeah. It's actually, you jumped ahead because I was going to ask about that too. But how did you transition?
How did I transition?
Yeah. So were you working for an agency and you just jumped into working for yourself? Was it gradual?
I would say that it was gradual in the sense that I was doing side hustles. So I was doing the odd job for people when they needed it. And a lot of my ex-employers would come to me when they had like a couple of months project. They were like, this is going to be like 10 hours a week or something like that. And we just need somebody to hop in. You don't need to be in the office 9 to 5. That was back when it was very standard to go to the office 9 to 5 or night or 8 to 6 or whatever. We work very long hours here in Mexico City. But then there was a point where emotionally I switched. I reached the point where I had honestly been made redundant from enough marketing teams. And as like foul swoops, we're just wiping out 90% of the marketing team or all of them, or the company died, that I just felt like being an employee at this point is so unstable. That was how I felt. And I know a lot of people feel the opposite, that being a freelancer is unstable. For me, I found a lot more financial stability in controlling who and how I work.
Yeah.
That for me was my transition. So mentally, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing the one client job. I'm not doing the one full-time employee. It's too much risk to put all my eggs in one basket. Now, that was COVID. You know, things were a little bit unstable, but I don't know if really it's likely to change. I'm that's why I say I envy people like you, Linda, who you actually have been doing this for a while. And for me, I was like, I'm just done. It was I'm done. I'm going rogue. I'm not job hunting anymore. I think envy is the word. I'm jealous of you never having had to do that rat race job hunting. Not that it's not stressful looking for clients, but it's very different.
It's stressful. I mean, the thing is, my transition from I was a personal trainer for like 15, 20 years, and I started doing some content writing for a local business publication. And then I realized how much I loved it, and then I could stay home. And at the time, I didn't know I was an introvert. I always considered myself an extrovert because I'm social, but I took the Myers-Briggs test when I was working with a coach, and she diagnosed me as an INTJ, and I argued with her about it. And she goes, the very fact that you're arguing with me means that you are an INTJ because we're very disagreeable apparently.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
So I didn't realize how much it was stressing me out to be working with people like day in and day, but I would just be exhausted and I would need a break between every hour. And I started loving the writing. And so I did sort of what you did with the side hustle. So when I would lose a personal training client because of financial reasons or whatever, they stopped working with me, I just stopped filling the gap and I started doing more writing. And so gradually it was a very gradual transition, but yeah. So
you're kind of already your own boss though, as a personal trainer. So you were used to scheduling in, but that's really interesting that you like discovered that you're an introvert through that.
Are you an introvert? Supposedly,
yes. According to my Briggs, yes, I am. Yeah, but allegedly. But my partner is a hermit introvert. So I always feel like less sociable, outgoing person.
It's
I'm very careful of my energy. And for me, like a full day socializing, I used to do these events as part of my marketing job. God, it's just like,
it's draining.
I can't even describe the drain. Yeah. And you know what? Walking around in heels all day. But I was going to say, when you were talking about this, this was the norm. Like, it didn't occur to us that there was an alternative of you could actually work from home. People that work from home were like stay-at-home moms and maybe just
stuffing envelopes. Remember, like back in the day.
Yeah. What were you doing? There weren't as many options. And it was hard, especially, I think, to get a professional executive salary.
Yeah.
From working from home. But nowadays we're working out, oh, well, maybe if I need these hours between each of my training clients, you know, maybe I should be using more of those hours to be with myself and be more productive and do deep work.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of things like that, like adaptability, what are the skills? Like, what was the difference in the skills you needed to work for an agency versus for yourself?
To work for an agency, you need to have patience and you need to, and so for me it was a good transition because it's never been a strong point of mine, so I did strengthen my patience and valuing other people's opinions and inputs and standpoints. For me it was kind of a baptism of fire that I needed to see the value in other people's work, and I was forced to through working in agencies. That's a real skill that you have. You do need people skills. I think that's why a lot of copywriters don't thrive in agencies, because a lot of us lack people skills by choice.
Right.
There's not many. There's not a lot of creatives out there that were like, oh, I just love going to eight-hour-long networking events. So I think that that is why it's very hard for a lot of us to be in that agency environment. You do also need to be happy with being reactive. And for me, that's not a skill that I have. Just being happy with being reactive, I can do it. If it's what's needed, if we need to put out fires, you know, that's what we say in Mexico anyway, putting out all the fires every single day, I can do it. But for me, it's not enriching. It's not a way that I want to work. I prefer to only be putting out fires when somebody made a mistake, or, you know, something happened in the news that we weren't expecting. I don't know about you. Are you the kind of person, Linda, where you like to have that rush, that adrenaline, or are you more, I need a plan?
No, yeah, I need a plan for sure. And that's definitely an introvert thing. Like I don't like surprises of any kind. I don't. And I think things through. Like even when I was doing, you know, when I was working with people, personal training, one time I went to somebody's house and they said, well, I can't work out with you today because I'm not feeling well, but my wife will. I'm like, I was mentally prepared. Like there's so much that goes on in my head before I approached copy the same way,
strange.
You know?
Yeah.
The only time I do like it is if it's a challenge. Like if it's something where somebody says, oh, this is, I work for a company and he's always talking about how boring his product is. And I always find something interesting. I said, no, I don't think so. And he even said to me, he goes, I don't even know where you find this stuff. And it's like, it's called research, you know? But I like a challenge, but not a sudden challenge where you need to fix this, you know, like right now.
Yeah, it's very different. And I think a lot of us find this in B2B. I've worked so long in startups and tech startups, but they're pretty dry. It's quite hard to make another platform, another SaaS thing look exciting. And SaaS, since we're talking about not using too many. So software as a service, that's what a lot of my experience has been in. It's hard to make that exciting. So I think you develop it as a skill. It's a creative skill to be able to find the interesting things. And there is always something, as long as you know the product well enough.
Yeah.
But I would have reacted the same as you if I'd have showed up to my client's house and they were like, oh, my wife's going to train with you. I'd be like, I didn't bring any of the equipment or the planning, or I don't know what to do.
And I know that this person he's a CEO of this company, and he was very much an extrovert, at least it seemed to me. Mm. And I know he didn't understand, like he thought I was kidding. And I mean, I did work with his wife, but it was like, I wasn't kidding. It's like, I really do have this, like, I need a plan.
I need a plan. Yeah.
It's tough.
Again,
I think it's tough being an introvert. I know it's funny where you said that a lot of us, you know, copywriters don't like being like on video or, you know, doing all these interactions. And I was speaking to a website developer and he said his last copywriter refused to ever get on camera with him. I said,
really?
Yeah. I said, how do you have a meeting? Like to me, this is as close as face-to-face as I'm going to get with most people. And like you just have to kind of do what you have to do. I don't think anyone loves it unless you're a real extrovert. You know, like I can do.
And even real extroverts would rather be in person, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So they can sap the energy out of everybody else. Maybe that's
but
the wrong way
to your
of
point
at
about
it.
The person who would not get on a camera like ever. I feel like that's kind of dry. So with a lot of my clients, we will do like the odd camera call, you know, like every couple of weeks when we're like all of us together. But when it's just the two of us, we normally won't put the camera on. But like our first meeting, we would have seen each other on camera, so you understand people's gestures, their expressions. Right. Like, oh, when she uses that tone of voice, she's actually smiling.
Right.
So she's not being a biatch. Like when she says something in that way, I've seen her and now I know that this is like the way that she jokes. I have to do that a lot because I'm very sarcastic and particularly self-deprecating. So I find this with a lot of Americans. I think they feel like I really dislike myself, but it's my sense of humor. So you have to get to know me a little bit. And I would always, even though I don't love being on camera, Zoom is not like my best friend. I see it as necessary so that the written communication works.
Right, exactly. And that's what's so important because, and my husband and I, we're very self-deprecating. I'm always making fun of myself and he cracks up. Yesterday, there's on the news about, we're watching some UFO thing and they were describing this alien grays being 3 foot tall and I forget what's going on. And I said, you know what? That sounds like me. And so my husband's like, yeah, but you know what? They don't talk a lot. And I said, okay, so I said, that would be your ideal wife, someone who just doesn't.
3 feet tall and doesn't talk too much. We don't know what the grays actually look like. I think that we assume that they'll be humanoid because we're so obsessed with our own form, but they probably won't be. They might be completely invisible. We can't even see them. But I don't know, a 3 foot tall, non-speaking wife. I don't know. That might be interesting for like a day.
Yeah.
And well, then you'd be like, no, I'm the dog. I need someone to talk to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely the one you would expect to have a podcast. So the two of us. But what about, I'm curious about the client relationship. So when you work for yourself, I mean, you are usually the person dealing directly with the client. Is it like that with an agency, or do you work through other people?
I would say no, usually not. And that can create quite a lot of friction. Usually you would have a product, what would it be, a project manager, or a salesperson even being their main point of contact, or the CEO. So the agencies I've worked at have been very small agencies, and the CEO would be doing a lot of the selling. Therefore, a lot of the work would come through somebody else at best. And this is probably at the best, like the agencies that I've enjoyed working at the most. There would be, say, a marketing leader or a content leader above me, and they would do a lot of the filtering of the requests, which if they're good, it's good,
right?
Because they will do that translation from, oh, the client said this, what they actually want is this, so we're going to deliver that. And then all I have to do is deliver on what they say. That's quite an enjoyable way to work, because then you're working with experts. But in situations where, and especially in companies, where I've been reporting it to somebody who doesn't get what I do, the translation doesn't happen. And then I don't have the direct contact with the final client, who might be an internal person. It might be somebody in partnerships or sales or whatever. But because I wasn't there, I'm just relying on 50% of the information, which is what my perhaps not so skilled boss wanted to pass me. That's very stressful for me to feel like, because I care about, I care about this. I want to do something well, and I know that my name is attached to everything. So I never want to hand in something that's bad or useless to somebody.
Yeah.
For me, having, as you mentioned, like this, what's the dynamic, like what's the hierarchy? For me, having that direct contact is so valuable. And in the majority of companies that I've worked at in-house, the best decision, or we will eventually arrive at the decision that Nadine and the creative, that team needs to be in the call when we have the kickoff. It doesn't work to simply write things down. Yes, we need a brief. Yes, but very few people are good at writing things down in a good creative brief. So it's better to have the creative team there. Have your designers, your web team, your copywriters, content marketers, everyone there, so that at least they can understand like the vibe, the feel of what they're looking for, because we have to do so much interpretation. Yeah. I'm sure that's the same for you. Like you hear your clients say, I want this, and you're like, okay, I know actually that what you want is that, but we're using different terminology.
Well, what I was going to say is I've worked for people who work for agencies, so that it's sort of a similar thing. I'm thinking of this one client. I just could not get the messaging right, but it was always through the agency owner that was giving me the directives. And I wanted to be in on the meetings, and he didn't want me to be in on the meetings. And it's like, I can't understand, because people who don't know exactly what we do, they don't know what we're looking for. It's like when a client hands you, hey, we've done all the research, you don't need to do any research. And you know that the research is different when you're looking for different things as a copywriter. And it's hard sometimes to get these things across without sounding condescending or uncooperative. And so I've had that a few times where the client did not like what I did or thought the voice was wrong, but yet I didn't have the opportunity to speak directly to them. And I know even with people who've reached out to me directly, and they go to the decision maker, who I always say, hey, I'd be happy to sit in on that meeting. And if they don't want me to, a lot of times it just doesn't work out, because I don't know how they're presenting me. I mean, I would do a much better job. I think all of us do, presenting ourselves,
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I understand, though, for them, it's that fear that, if I introduce you to my copywriter, you might just contract her directly and then you won't come through me. In my opinion, though, that means you're not a very good project manager or agency owner, because the agencies I work with currently, or the clients I work with currently, I prefer to work with them than maybe with their higher ups, because they get me to a certain extent. So they do that, I call it translation, but that kind of lowering the tone so that I can understand what they want from their company, which is all very high level and very technical. And I don't then have to do the research or understanding. They take it to my level of understanding. If somebody is not doing that well, though, And they're more fearful of, if I introduce Linda to my client's just going to go straight to Linda. For me, that's like, well, you're maybe not a very good agency owner or salesperson. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's a skill that I think we have to learn. This is a trust issue as well. Some people, they want to be in on it, but it doesn't take anything to record the meeting and send you over the recording. You know, I think for me, there's also a lot of distrust of agencies, which is strange because so many companies choose to go with an agency because they feel like they're specialized and it's usually a bit cheaper than hiring an in-house person in a lot of countries long-term. So we'll hire an agency, we'll get them to do it, but then they still don't really trust. They're always second-guessing the agency. And the language in-house, when I'm in corporate, I'll be hearing them going, oh, well, the agency did this. And it's always like the agency is always to blame.
Right.
So I think we have like a cultural distrust of agencies. Therefore, these people might say, hey, you know, if I introduce them to Linda, like they're just going to want to go straight with the copywriter. But then why did they hire the agency?
I know. And that's interesting because I didn't even think about that. Because this person was very kind of paranoid about me. Mm-hmm. Like it was just a weird dynamic. And the thing is, ethically, if they came to me, I would say, you know, I'm sorry, but I went through so-and-so.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm part of their team. So I don't feel like it would be right for me. And I would say that because I don't want to be on bad terms with someone who could potentially get me more work too, you know, the agency. That one thing I wanted to bring up too is that I knew of someone who she ran an agency, a copywriting agency, and said that one of the problems is people who would contact the agency wanted her to do the work. She was the owner of the agency. And, you know, the thing is they had so much work at this agency that she would give another copywriter the assignment.
Yeah.
And the person would come to her and say, I thought you were going to write it. I thought you were going to do it. You know, the whole idea of starting an agency, I imagine for a lot of copywriters, is you are so busy that you can't do all the work. So you have a team of copywriters, right?
Exactly. Yes. And you train them up in your voice and your way of working and your style so that your clients will like them. I can empathize. For me, this is why Writewiser, I did put it on my website eventually because I wanted it to be clear. Like, if somebody's writing for you, it's me. That's not to say there isn't a team behind me. I do not do graphic design. There's a lot of things I don't do. There's a lot of things I don't do, but are important to add into your marketing. So it's all very well me coming up with your email marketing strategy, but I'm actually not an expert. This is a surprise. I'm not an expert in web design. So while I can move things around on people's website, I'd much rather they work with my web designer and contract them through me. For me, that's a sign of choosing people's specialties.
Right.
But exactly for this reason, because a lot of people expect that if I contact you, I expect you to be the right. If I contact your company, you're Writewiser and you're Nadine, a copywriter by trade, I expect you to be writing. And for that reason, I've kind of lent into it and said, this is what we're doing. But I would also argue, if you're hiring an agency, not a freelancer, and I guess that's legal reasons, maybe they feel it's a bit safer. Well, if what you want is a freelancer, which is what they're looking for, is I hire you and you do the writing, they should have hired a freelancer.
Right. Right.
In my opinion. Yeah.
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 That's a good point. But that's something that was brought up. And I remember thinking, wow, that's, now you're in a corner because it's like, well, I'm the owner, but what do you do? So this, you know, she ended up doing a lot.
It's not like she wasn't revising everything. I'm sure she was checking things to make sure that they were good. So it's strange that they would have had that reaction. But yeah, for exactly that reason, I tend to find that a lot of people, especially through LinkedIn, they contact me expecting me to be the final writer. So knowing that, I'm happy to do the writing. I'm happy to do the strategy. Unless, I don't know, it's health writing, you know, medical writing or something like that. But then I'm pretty transparent about this is going to go to, mm-hmm. I can't do medical writing.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people. I'm very happy to work with them and I'll manage them for you and act. And this is why I call myself a chief writing officer, because I often manage other people's freelancers. So I can either do the management for you or I can contract them. Like they'll be my contractor. And you just pay me and it's just one bill, which a lot of people prefer.
Yeah.
Or I can just open up my network to you. I'm very happy to do that. I would rather send somebody the right writer or the right designer or whatever it is for them. And if they want to contract them through me because they want that management and they don't want to have to teach them how to write in their style and their, you know, their branding. And yeah. And the other reason that they need that, coming back to something that you said just a minute ago, is that a lot of people don't know what they want. And a lot of people don't have messaging guides. So that's why you need to be in the meeting, because so few companies, small companies specifically, have any style guide that they can hand off to their contractors.
It's super
helpful. And that's,
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, one last question for you is, if someone is either just starting out as a copywriter or kind of, thinking about maybe switching gears, what would you suggest if they're considering, going to an agency versus going it alone? Like, what are things to consider?
I would say if you're just getting started, get your name in an agency. It's not necessarily, and I'm not bashing all agencies. Some of them are lovely. It's often the most stressful way to get started, but then you'll get some contacts. And I feel like you'll get your name out there. People start trusting you. You can then say, well, I worked at this agency and now I'm a freelancer. I feel, Linda, like the way that you do it is perhaps harder for that reason, because building up your referral system is more time consuming. So perhaps a year or two at an agency, a year at one agency, a year at another agency. The good thing about agencies is they don't care if you've been 6 months at one place and 6 months at another. They're never going to look at you and think, oh, that's unstable, because it's an inherently unstable job.
Okay.
And I think that that's a good way to start. That said, start getting bylines very quickly. The reason I started Writewiser was actually just because I couldn't get something that said by Nadine Hare, because I was always writing for somebody else. Right. It was always in a company's name or at best an executive's name. And I'm like, you just have to believe that I wrote for this Fortune 500. take my word for it. I didn't just pick some random articles offline. And so I started Writewiser. I just made my own blog so that I could have some articles that I wrote and that people could say, oh, look, she does write, reasonably coherently. So probably she did write these other things. And then I started opening up to other writers. And quick plug, if I may, if there are any emerging writers or transitioning writers that just want a byline, that's what Writewiser is for. You have to pay to publish, and I'll give you back links to your sites, because for me on a social level, that's really important. So I would say that, yeah, start an agency. Don't be afraid. It might not be the best money, best pay, but it's really good experience and you'll get your network, and start getting bylines as soon as possible because you will need them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, on that note, so where can people find you? Like you just mentioned now, if there's starting out copywriters, they can find you on your website.
Where they can find me on my website, writewiser.co.uk. You can actually submit articles directly through there. I do recommend dropping me a line beforehand through the contact form to contribute to it. I then promote it and help people get more visibility. And I say it's a backlink, if nothing else, for many people. Writewiser.co.uk is my website. I would love, if anyone's interested in just learning a little bit more about me on a personal level, if they popped into Migrant in Mexico on Substack. That's where I talk about all my hiccups and struggles and a lot of fun on there. That's where I'm much more personal. And thank you for letting me plug those thoughts.
Yeah, and I'll put them in the show notes too, so that'll be great. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of information. I have to check out that stack. Yeah, thank you so much, Nadine. This has been great, and it's a lot.
No, thank you. No, same. I know we could, and I deliberately held back on the fitness angle because I know you and I could talk about that for hours. You know, I'm obsessed. But I was like, no, we're gonna stay on topic today.
Right. Well, we'll get to that another
time.
All right. Thanks again.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and engaging. If so, please share it with your friends and colleagues who might also be interested in marketing and copywriting trends and innovations. And remember, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the B2B Marketing and Copywriting Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next week with another show, so stay tuned.